One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice.
Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, building the collective conscious, show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. And I am Michael Eric Owens. I guess I'm your only host today. I mean, DT is just a holiday season, and folks, you know how international he is. They ain't no telling where he might be right now. So I'm here solo in the studio. I'm not really solo, though. I mean, I got Richard here, the engineer, the architect, doing his thing. And we're so happy to be together, me and Richard, back in Blackened Studios, folks. And we are here today to talk about our part two. We went into part one about American white nationalism, but we're going to go into part two today. But I just want to bring to your attention something that has happened just recently. You know, we're in this election cycle, and I mean, people are getting crazy out there on either side of the issues, and whether you are, pro Hillary or pro Trump. I don't know why you'd be pro Trump. I'm just going to keep it honest with you. But anyway, but there are people that are out there that are pro Trump, and all of these, you know, these picks, first of all, that he's making is just shocking to me. I mean, Jeff Sessions, I mean, he couldn't even become a federal judge because of his racist past. And now he's going to be the top law enforcement person. And I mean, General Flynn and Flynn's son retweeting about this so-called, sex trafficking, Pizzagate, that the one guy walked into with the AR-15 and started shooting up in the air because he thought that there were, children being held against their will at this place. And to believe the nonsense, the fake news, we had a rise and I think the unfolding or the unveiling of these people behind the fake news and how they're making money and really how that has played a critical part in the election cycle. But this whole thing about Russia hacking, I mean, I don't know. You have to believe in our intelligence agency, CIA, FBI. Over 17 intelligence agencies said Russia influenced our election this year. And the president-elect says he disagrees. Now, first of all, the president-elect has no secret clearance. He has no espionage experience. He has no government experience. He has not worked in government. He has not worked for the CIA or the FBI or the intelligence agencies. He does not know about interrogations. He does not know about how we seek out information, how we spy and how people spy on us. He has no clue what happens in the intelligence agency. This is all new to him. He's given an opportunity as a president-elect to learn about the system and learn about how we go about it, gathering intelligence and how we check intelligence. He's learning all of that. So, folks, he knows nothing. But one thing he does know, Russia had nothing to do with it. To me, that's hilarious. Do we really want someone in office that will disagree with the intelligence community? And his tweet was, these were the same people that said there was weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Okay, that's reason enough to dismiss all of these experts in the field of intelligence. I think out of anything, that was the most bizarre story that, I mean, I don't know. I mean, he came out and he told it pretty much telling his followers he's not going to do anything he ran on. So I don't know what's more bizarre or not. But folks, hang in there with me. We're going to take a break. Listen, part two, American white nationalism. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Wow. What's up, guys? I am Leah Marie, owner of The Selfie Gods. Make sure you head over to our website, www.theselfiegods.com, and order your very own selfie moon. If you need that good lighting whenever you out in the club or you out hanging out with your friends and you need some more light for your selfies, that's definitely what you want to get, the selfie moon.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. Folks, thank you for being here with me today. Solo again. DT is out doing what DT does. I'm sure he's doing something fascinating. He's going to send some photos. He's going to send us something just to let us know. We are approaching the holiday season. Hope you got all your Christmas shopping done. You only got a few more days, so make sure you take care of those loved ones. But really, it's not about what we buy or what we give. It's about how we treat one another. And during this season, folks, it should be the season of love, and the way that we conduct ourselves with our family members as well as our co-workers. Christmas parties are happening. So have fun. Be safe. Don't do anything I wouldn't do. American white nationalism. We talked about how our country was based upon white nationalistic principles. In other words, from the beginning, we viewed, or those who came to this country viewed, the native peoples as being other, less, seeing them as being subordinate to the white European settlers, which caused them to, of course, almost commit genocide on the native peoples. The same thing with Africans. They brought Africans here and saw Africans as less. Matter of fact, according to the Constitution, they were 3/5 of a person. And so we have a system based upon white superiority, and how throughout history, this idea of whiteness, and I mean, it's too complex for us to unpack in one episode. I mean, the Irish, when they came here, they were discriminated against. The Germans, when they came here, they were discriminated against. I mean, you can go with all the Italians, the Japanese, you can go, but there was a coalescing in history where the quote unquote Western Europeans, not Eastern, Western Europeans, decided that it was better to be white than to have strictly their identity be based upon the geographical space in which they came from. And so we have this system of whiteness. And on down throughout American history, we see this thing showing its ugly head, right? And we see the pushback to try to bring about equality. We see the civil rights movement, the black power movement, the feminist movement, the gay and lesbian movement. We see all these movements to counteract a system that designate anyone other than white European, and let's just be honest, males, because you did have the white female, which did not get the right to vote to 1920, who was, we would say, relegated to the home and to being a mother and not really being able to work. So it was really white males. And so this thing called white nationalism has always, my point has always been, it's embedded into American society. You know, it's hard for us to unpack it because white seems normal, right? You look at television, you see very little diversity. You go into boardrooms of America, you see very little diversity. You go to Washington, the halls of power, you see very little diversity. White seems normal. So it seems normal to the average person. But when you step back and you begin to look at it and unpack it for what it is a design system to marginalize anyone that is not white and male. Now, let's talk a little bit about this. Here's a audio coming up that I want you to take a listen to, and we're going to have a conversation about it.
Tonight, white nationalists are seizing on Donald Trump's tough talk when it comes to immigration, insisting Trump is speaking to them when he talks of deportation and restricting immigration. The campaign disavowing that support. But these followers have become an issue for Trump. Tom Foreman is out front.
It's our right as a sovereign nation to choose immigrants that we think are the likeliest to thrive and flourish and love us.
Whether Donald Trump wanted to or not, his tough immigration speech triggered support among people who see immigration by minorities as a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, no, the speech last night was beautiful. It was really, really good, and I was really happy about it.
The obvious difference was his skin color. I
mean, neo-Nazi Andrew Anglin was thrilled as he appeared on the radio show of former Klansman David Duke, who was pretty happy too.
We got to take America back, and we have to defend the heritage of the people who've created America.
In other words, white people. One goal excited special praise.
To keep immigration levels measured by population share within historical norms.
Some of these groups clearly believe that would mean a preference for white Christian immigrants. White nationalist writer Richard Spencer cited long ago legislation severely limiting immigrants from Eastern and Southern Europe, Africa, Arabs, and Asians. Trump is returning to the ideas of the 1924 Immigration Act. Immigrants will reflect the racial makeup of the country. And white nationalist publisher Jared Taylor called the speech almost perfect. Donald Trump has tied our foolish immigration policies to every problem we have. Trump has already been accused several times of encouraging bigoted or racist views.
For a total and complete shutdown.
For example, with his call for a ban on Muslim immigrants. Now he is pushing a somewhat different approach.
Applicants will be asked for their views about honor killings, about respect for women and gays and minorities, attitudes on radical Islam.
And his running mate insists these policies are not about race.
Donald Trump is saying we need to make sure that people that are coming into America of every race and creed and color share a fundamental appreciation for the ideals of this country, a fundamental admiration for the people of this country. And that's been something that's been a part of our immigration system for generations.
Still, even as the campaign says it wants nothing to do with David Duke and his ilk, Trump's approach is energizing some people who like America as a fundamentally white Christian country mm-hmm. and who want every entrance guarded with that in mind.
Welcome back, folks. Wow. That kind of sums it up, really, when you think about what Mr. Trump has unleashed in our country. Again, going back, it's always been there, but it's been held at bay. It's been, I would say, integrated into the unseen system. In other words, it operated behind closed doors. But Trump himself has become the spokesperson for white nationality. And you notice in the video, the audio we saw there, talked about retaining this country as a white Christian nationalistic country. We talked about in part one how Christians and white supremacists and also white nationalists vote in concert to elect Donald Trump. But think about for a moment that immigration policy idea that these individuals want to go back to. Because they know America's changing. They realized the demographics of America cannot be denied. You read Pat Buchanan's book, The Death of the West. I'm no Pat Buchanan fan. Matter of fact, we will probably agree just on this, is that America's changing and you can't deny it. And in his book, he points out just how this is going to take place, how the white majority is going to find themselves being the minority in this country. This is what white nationalists understand. This is what evangelicals understand, that they will become the minority. Therefore, this immigration fight, this build the wall, it's about stopping the influx to prevent the tipping of the scales away from the dominant culture. Yes, we want to open up the borders, according to these Richard Spencer and Steve Bannon, these white nationalists. Yeah, let's open up the borders and allow for people to come from Western Europe, white people, because we're losing the numbers. The numbers are not adding up year by year. We're getting smaller and smaller till we will be insignificant. Well, maybe you're getting smaller and smaller and you're going to have to share the land. Maybe that's, you know, maybe that's a concern, because it's not a zero sum game. You know, just because how ludicrous this is. Blacks, Latinos, Native Americans, Asians, we have been minorities since the jump. And now your fear is because you're going to become a minority, that you might lose out, that, I don't know, are you afraid of some sort of retribution or repercussions? The fight for civil rights has always been for equality, not for retribution. But I mean, it's funny to me how we are in denial of these historic principles that continue to wage power in our country today. When we talk about our laws and attacks on affirmative action, and even in the conversation that I was in this morning on Facebook about that black team, the basketball team, where the fans turned their back on them, and yeah, that's kind of normal. I mean, when I was in high school, we played a high school team and they turned their back on us, and they put up newspapers like they were reading the newspaper, which I thought was pretty cool. You know, like we were not important, like the news was more important than us, right? I thought that was pretty cool. But somebody in this particular crowd held up a Trump sign, and I talked, we had a discussion about how that, what that sign represents. That sign represents something to white nationalists, to white supremacists. It represents something to evangelicals. And folks, it represents something to black people and minorities. It represents racism, discrimination, bigotry, sexism, xenophobic. It represents all those things. And I was told on Facebook today that people are just being too sensitive. We need to not be too sensitive. He's our president now. Folks, I don't know. I don't even want to get into that, because we got to take a break. I might just break the mic if I keep going after that one right there. But listen, hang in with us. We're going to be back. We're going deeper into American white nationalism. We'll be right back.
This is Josh K.
And I am Leah Marie.
And when we listen to podcasts, we always listen to
One Mic, One Voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
Your choice.
This is Richard Taplin, host of the Black Box Podcast. Wanted to tell you, thanks again for listening to the One Mic, One Voice. please be sure to check out their Facebook page, One Mic, One Voice Podcast. And while you're on Facebook, go ahead and stop by Blackin Studios. Also, check out our website, blackinstudios.com, to find all the podcasts that record here, including the One Mic, One Voice Show, The Black Box, The Elijah Bailey Show, The Roxy by Design Show, and also the Gamer's Den Podcast. Thanks again for all of your support, and remember, it's Blackin.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice Show. Again, I am solo in the studio. DT is out, doing only what DT can do. We miss him, of course. He always brings so much depth to the show. So I'm just chilling in here with Richard. We're just trying to, talk a little bit about American white nationalism. I had said before that evangelicals, white supremacists, and white nationalists all voted in concert, voted together in unity to elect Donald Trump. There's a reason for that. There's a reason why they joined together. It wasn't simply because, he was a Christian, because Donald Trump's not a Christian. It wasn't because he's against abortion. He was for a woman's right to choose. It's because Donald Trump represents, okay, let me just say this, and we're going to get into this after the other break. Let's make America great again. He represents going back in time to a place, a space where white folks, mainly males, felt secure and who they were because they were in charge, because everybody else was subjugated, including women. Okay. And so that's what Mr. Trump represents. But who are these nationalists? They've been around forever, folks. This is nothing new. I would say the founding fathers were nationalistic. Oh, wow. Am I going to make some people mad because the founding fathers were so pious and, they just had a love of this country? Well, they didn't have a love of all people, though. As you can recall, they had slaves. As you can recall, Thomas Jefferson, the one that people hold so high and dear, the architect of these original documents, along with Madison and others, Washington. Jefferson, had Sally Mae. Oh, yeah, you remember her? Yeah, she was a black slave that he had children by. Yeah, okay, yeah. I think Jefferson was kind of married too, right? So this idea, how we make icons, right? We rewrite American history to make these folks look like they are, just the greatest people of that generation. Well, depending on how you define greatness. But let me say this. They were nationalistic. Otherwise, they wouldn't allow for slavery and the subjugation of black people. Otherwise, Jefferson wouldn't have wrote the things that he did about black people. Folks, they considered white men to be the most intelligent, the most gifted, the smartest, the most creative. And they saw themselves, the arrogance, the hubris of these quote unquote founding fathers, to talk about in the founding documents that all men are created equal. But you're not a man, though. Yeah, because of your skin color. You're not a man. Matter of fact, you're my possession, right? That's what chattel slavery was. That's the meaning of it. Means that you are a possession. Like I got this phone in my hand. That's my possession. I can break it. I can stomp on it. I can spit on it. I can do anything I want to it. Because it's my possession. So these tendencies, this thought has, it's always been here. Donald Trump Only again, he is the spokesperson. He is the spokesperson. I mean, and again, Donald Trump is not going to be the first, racist president. I mean, you can go all the way back to Andrew Johnson. I mean, you can go back in history where presidents despised black people and native peoples. Okay. So it's nothing new is what I'm trying to say to you today. But this movement has found an ally in Donald Trump. I want you to listen to something. An ally in Donald Trump.
The number of white nationalist groups has surged in the United States over the past couple of years. Experts say they have been energized by the divisive rhetoric of this year's presidential campaign. The NewsHour's P.J. Toby met with the leaders of one group and produced this report and a warning. Some may find the imagery and symbols in this story disturbing. Too
scared to wake you up. Late summer, in the hills of East Tennessee, a small group of white power activists hold a meeting. There's merchandise, music,
now they may call you racist,
and a rewriting of history.
Despite the mythology, Russian Jews were never oppressed in any way.
Later, the group goes to a nearby town for a rally. In the center of it all, Matthew Heimbach.
Because a white homeland shall be our homeland.
Just 25 years old, the Southern Poverty Law Center has called Heimbach the face of a new generation of white nationalists. In 2015, he founded the Traditionalist Worker Party. They're white separatists who want distinct homelands in the U.S. for whites and blacks. They want Jews out of the country entirely.
Are you guys racist?
The definition of racist is thrown around all the time in America, and it's used almost exclusively just to determine any white people that want to be able to advocate for their best interests.
But there were Nazis and all kinds of very strident anti-minority propaganda. Anyone with a Nazi symbol on them is going to be considered a racist, if not racially insensitive.
It's our movement is moving towards being a European-style nationalist movement, and I respect all my comrades from other organizations that might take a little bit of a different presentation than we do. Then you can see what direction our movement is moving in, and I'm happy to be a part of that.
This election season, Heimbach is supporting Donald Trump. In March, he was caught on tape shoving a young African-American woman as she was being escorted out of a Trump rally. When he's not on the road preaching white nationalism, Heimbach lives here, the southern Indiana town of Paoli. Just steps from the town square, Heimbach moved his family to this two-acre plot. Matt Parrott, Heimbach's friend and co-founder of the Traditionalist Worker Party, bought the land in a bank repossession. A handful of Heimbach's other followers have joined them. Their plan? To build a community of like-minded separatists in this rural enclave. From the Ku Klux Klan to skinheads, white power groups are nothing new in the United States, but in recent years, their numbers have grown, drawing disaffected whites who say they feel increasingly marginalized in America 2016. Heimbach sees overlap between Trump's message and white nationalist ideology.
He has shown us that the majority of everyday Americans support our sort of message. They're tired of globalism. They're tired of rampant capitalism. They're tired of Wall Street being put first instead of Main Street.
At 34, Matt Parrott is one of the older members of Heimbach's group. He's lived in Paoli most of his life. He gave me a tour.
Everything's winding up and closing down. All through here you see business for sale. Up there, that business is also for sale. When I was growing up, like, everybody's dad worked in a factory. You know, you'd have the dad working in a factory and you'd have the stay-at-home mom. And now both mom and dad are working some crappy service job that doesn't pay benefits, oftentimes just does part-time.
He blames this decline on global trade policies. Using a common anti-Semitic trope, he blames one group in particular.
The globalist trade and things like that are largely due to the global Jewish economic and banking interests.
Parrott says that all of this has fueled both white nationalism and support for Trump.
He taps into a deep sense of foreboding in white America.
Heimbach says this foreboding comes from new attitudes in America. Chief among his complaints, the increasing cultural currency of the Black Lives Matter movement and the notion of white privilege.
I would dare anyone to go into the hollers of West Virginia or of Kentucky or the communities that have been destroyed by globalism around this country, where the communities have literally been torn apart, and look in the eyes of white working class men, women, and children and tell them that they have any power in this system whatsoever.
Economic anxieties play into it. I think I would say that it is more hyped than real.
Carol Anderson is a professor at Emory University and the author of White Rage, The Unspoken Truth of Our Racial Divide.
It is racism, pure, unabashed, unadulterated, as I say, USDA grade A prime beef racism. Race is framing this discussion even when it seems cloaked in language such as law and order or stop and frisk. That's race.
Wow. You know, we're stopped there because there's some other I think revealing things that the video talks about, but it is all based in race, folks. For someone to sit up and tell you it has nothing to do with race, they themselves say that they want a white country. What is that? That is a identity marker, right? It is based in race and it is based in fear. They are afraid. And again, let me say this. I'm not saying that every white male in America feels this way. It's not what I'm saying. Matter of fact, I have some white male friends that we've been friends all our lives and we get along great. Some of my greatest mentors are white. You've heard me say this, white and black. So I'm not generalizing this, but I'm saying if the shoe fit, wear it. This exists in our country, and we cannot be in denial thereof. Okay. The gentleman says, Matthew says, Heimbach says, European style nationalism. European style. Okay. We've talked about that. That is as ancient as this country. Let's make America great again. Okay. He says you're called a racist because you advocate for oneself, for one's own self. Right. Okay. So, but he has a problem with Black Lives Matter. How hypocritical is that? So he can advocate for his belief, but folks can't come out and say Black Lives Matter, right? Can't do that. They can't advocate for their own beliefs. They can't do that, right? That's why this is so problematic, and that's why it's so paternalistic, and that's why it's so arrogant, because yes, we can advocate, but no, you can't. You definitely can't get up and say Black Lives Matter. And this, the disinfected whites. Did poverty just hit white people? They go around to Paoli or wherever that place is. And yeah, people, you know, businesses that went out and go through the inner city. How long has the inner city been impoverished? How long has the inner city been forgotten? How long have people been displaced? We got children that don't even know where their next meal is coming from in their inner cities. Now, I'm not saying that the rural places, there's not a challenge. I'm not saying that. But to sit up and say that the problem, look around my community in America's jacked up. Well, folks, you need to look around the entire country and understand just how jacked up America has been for Black people, for Hispanic people. Man. And then this claim, right? I mean, this is laughable, right? The majority of everyday Americans respect their movement. They understand their movement. Every day, I mean, let me tell you what that's code word for. The majority of white males approve of their movement. Every day. What is everyday America? I live in America every day. Richard, do you live in America every day? I mean, you don't leave like some days, do you? You can go to Europe and live there for a while. Come, I wish I could. I mean, maybe if I could hit it rich. You know, DT might be in Europe right now. You know what I mean? He all over the place. He might be but we're all everyday Americans. And guess what? Matthew, we don't respect your movement. I think it is horrific, the things you talk about and the things you stand for. And then this blame game. We're going to have to take a break in a minute, but this blame game. Oh, I'm going to blame the Jews. Yeah, it's, you know, global trade. Let's blame it on the Jews. Blame it on the Jews. Man, how long they been blaming stuff on Jewish people? I mean, they run the banking industry, the media, they run everything, man. I don't get it, man. Every time I turn around, somebody's trying to blame something on Jewish people. It's a blame game. My life is jacked up because of Jewish people, man. I mean, my life is messed up, man. It's because of Jews, right? And then when a black person stands up and says, you know what, the man holding me down, oh, my God, the race guard. You see what I'm saying? But they can blame it on everybody. Blame it on blacks, Black Lives Matter. Blame it on affirmative action. Blame it on everything other than take responsibility for your own life. Your own life. That's what you keep telling us to do. If you only take responsibility for your own community or your take all, you know, that payola you running around there, all those businesses, take responsibility for your own community, folks. The same mess you throw at us, we throw it right back at you. Hang with me, folks. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
This is Dr. Paul Ketchum, and I fully support One Mic, One Voice, and I recommend you do the same.
This is DT of the One Mic, One Voice podcast. Just want to let you guys know you can go over to iTunes and search us at One Mic, One Voice, and be sure to rate and review our episodes. Let us know about any feedback that you have and what you enjoy about the episodes. Also, you can go over to Stitcher, where you can get the latest and freshest episodes of our podcast streamed directly to your smartphone or iPad. No downloading or syncing. How cool? Real smooth. Also, we'd just like to take the time to thank you for your time and for your energy and for spending time with us as we discuss the historical record of our time.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. Now, Richard told me I got to calm down. Richard, in the break, he said, look at here, man. You, my meter's way up red. Calm down. Get a hold of yourself. DT might be upset with you when you... I think DT probably listening in, man, having a good time. Folks, American white nationalism, right? Okay. I want to spend just a few moments unpacking Mr. Trump's motto. Now, some of you think it's the original motto. I don't know how you could, because it doesn't speak of any level of creativity. Let's make America great again. I mean, I don't know. I think I probably could have thought of something better. You gave me a little time. It just seemed very creative to me. Let's make America great again. But let's talk about, how does this line up with white nationalism? Well, the desire to take the country back, the desire to take the country back to a place in time where you had white males in charge, right? Well, it was a white, quote unquote, white country. Yeah, you know what tickles me is this idea that this clown Richard Spencer talked about how white people built this country. Well, okay, you took the country, right? Number one, right? Don't forget that. But then you built it on the backs of slaves. So how can you sit back and say white people built this country, right? The White House was built by slaves. Matter of fact, Washington, D.C. was built by slaves, right? So this idea here of let's make America great. He didn't say something like, you know, make America great. Okay. Let America be great. He said, let's make America great again. That's moving back. That's saying that it was great at one particular time and place. During the whole campaign season, I never heard one reporter say to Mr. Trump, okay, when was America great? That's my question to you today. When was America great? When? Was it like, you know, Trail of Tears? Was it all the treaties that they made with the native peoples that they broke? Was it the land run here in Oklahoma? You know, they kind of like took people's land. Was it that like the Middle Passage when they brought all those slaves over here? Was it the cotton field? Maybe convict leasing? You remember that system? Or was it Jim Crow? Was it great then? Separate but equal, Plessy versus Ferguson, you guys sit in the back. Or was it great during the civil rights movement when we saw the dogs going after those children? Was it great then? Was it great during Vietnam when we saw all our soldiers coming back in bodies bags? Was it great when we dropped the atomic bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki? Was it great then? Oh, let me see. Was it great Reaganomics that cut out all the social programs and took funding out of education? When was it great when Clinton implemented the mass incarceration in public and private prison systems that we saw the escalation of black bodies going into prison? Was it great then? I don't. Was it great when women were denied the right to vote? Was it great when gay and lesbian folks were denied the right to love one another? When my point is, when was it great? When was it great, folks? I'm just on the surface of the atrocities in this country. Was it great when we bombed the heck out of Iraq, killed all those civilians? Was it great then? Let's make America great again. Okay. Now, you do know somebody else used this phrase. It was back in 1934. You can look it up yourself. It's back in 1934. It was actually in, much to my astonishment, it was in the Green Bay Press Gazette. Green Bay Press Gazette. I'm from Wisconsin. That's why it's. And actually, it was Adolf Hitler. Wow. It was Adolf Hitler. There, you know, the Huffington Post, and also they were quoting a article from Vanity Fair in which Donald Trump was given Hitler's letters, and he said he kept it by his bedside. That's what his ex-wife has said, that he was a reader of Hitler's letters. And Hitler actually said that he would make Germany great again. Wow. What's interesting is that Germany had suffered this great loss, right? World War I. And Hitler, this thug, comes to power. Everybody thought he was a joke. It says the article tells the story of the rise of Hitler, first explaining that people thought he was merely a joke and laughed at him. What happened during the election? I don't know about you, Richard, but Trump was kind of funny, though. I mean, it was kind of outlandish, the stuff he was saying, and he was unbelievable, right? But Hitler soon took advantage of Germany's dissatisfaction with their lot in life. What did we talk about earlier on One Mic, One Voice? We talked about this idea that somehow white folks have lost, that somehow they have been cut out, they have been marginalized. It's just like the same thing about Christianity. You hear people say Christianity is under attack. Man, every time I look around, I see a church. When I pick up my money, it says, "In God we trust." I'm saying, how is one of the number one books seller in the world is the Bible? But Christianity is under attack. People believe that, Richard. They like, yeah, my religion is under attack. How is it under attack? Okay. It's that same type of foolishness that have led so many to believe that their life and circumstances, that their very being is being rubbed out simply because the country is getting more color, more pigment in it. Folks, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
Thank you for downloading this episode. Here on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play Music, or whatever podcasting library you're listening to this show on, please rate and review. Those reviews and ratings help us tremendously. We thank you.
This is Quraysh Ali Lansana, poet, author, educator, and Oklahomie. And when I listen to podcasts, I'm on that One Mic, One Voice joint.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. We about to close this thing down, folks. I appreciate you hanging with me along with DT's not here. He's not in the studio, but he is here in spirit. And part two, we still got one more part to do, American white nationalism. Man, do you realize Clinton is up by almost 3 million in the popular vote? I'm just thinking, how can you win? And you know, we can go into the, maybe one show we'll dab into the Electoral College and why it was created and this archaic form of trying to elect somebody in a democracy when everybody's voice should be the same, equal. And democracy means that everyone's voice is equal. A Electoral College says, no, that's not the case. Okay. No. Right. So maybe we'll unpack that. But to me, this idea of winning almost 3 million votes than this clown, and she loses. You know, that's almost like, you know what that's like? That's like, hold on a second. Let me give you an analogy here. That's like the Thunder playing, and they actually outscore the team. But in the third quarter, the other team outscored them. So they lost. That would be foolishness, right? I mean, you would say, how in the world could they had more points than the other? The other team. The big thing was you had to get whoever scored more in the third quarter. That's it. It's not the long game. It's just that one quarter. That would be foolish. Why in the world can you win 3 million more votes and lose? It's foolish, folks. And for us as citizens to stand by and allow for a candidate to get almost 3 million, not 300,000, not a million, but 3 billion votes more. I'm just saying, it just seems weird to me. American white nationalism. Okay. So how do these nationalists, how do they maintain their control? Because it seems like now they're out in the open and it seems like we should be able to just do something with them, right? Because we're America. We love everybody. We don't hold anything against you because of your color, your gender or your right? We're America, right? We're the city on the hill. So how do they get away with it, right? Because we're in denial. Because from our origin, we have always subjugated people. From the beginning, we have always considered ourselves to be better. And that gives us the right. Matter of fact, God gives us the right to inflict whatever we want to on those who are different. So they maintain their control because they're in power, right? They're in power. If you look at the Senate, you look at the, how many black senators do we have right now? How many black senators have we had throughout history, right? Wow. Okay. Look at the House. It is dominated by white old ass men. It just is. I mean, you look at them, man. Biden talking about. I'm like, I'm 73 and I'm thinking about running in the next 4 years. Man, sit down somewhere. There's some young people here, man. It's got some vitality and vision and compassion and passion and all of that. Sit down. But it is a old white man's club, right? They maintain power. That's why they're so happy about Trump, because finally, someone that has their views. What they realize is no social change happens without a change in laws or policies or statutes. So from the local level, to the state level, to the national level, you have white supremacists in charge. Don't even talk about black. You know, when you talk about black liberation theology and you talk about black supremacists, you know, black people that want to separate and have their own nation and have their, oh man, those are the scariest people on the planet, they tell me. You know, I can't believe they just hate all types of people. But we don't look at white nationalists like that. Right? I don't believe in separating. I mean, Marcus Garvey tried that thing, right? He went back to Africa, didn't work out too good. I've been to Africa. I spent 6 months. Love the continent. We got folks listening to us from Africa. Shout out Kenya, Nigeria. We love you. We love you, right? I'm American. Born here. I can't go back to Africa, as Trump told me. Black lives don't matter here. Go back to Africa. Well, you know, I wouldn't mind going back to visit. However, I actually live here in the United States. Immigration control. We've already talked about how they want to. They want to open up the doors for Western Europeans to come in. Why they limit the entry from everybody else? Why? Because their numbers are shrinking. Let me say this again, because I know some of y'all listening to me saying, man, I can't, Michael don't like white people. I love white people. I do. I love them, man. They're in my family. I do not like white nationalists. So if you fall into that category, I don't like you. Why? Because you debase people. You have this superiority complex. You are flawed. Matter of fact, I will say you are diseased in the mind because you think you are superior. It is out of your fear of losing what little you have. I'm not here to take it away from you. Just because something good happens to me doesn't mean something bad is going to happen to you. I mean, you had a black president and you went nuts when that happened. So immigration control, folks, that's why this whole watch debate as it plays out with Mr. Trump in the coming days. There's a big protest, a big women's protest on the day of inauguration up in Washington, D.C. Folks going to be protest. He can't even get a band in D.C. that's going to play for the inauguration. All of them have turned him down. He's not well liked. Okay, so maintaining laws that disenfranchise minorities, challenging laws that equal the playing field, and making new laws that support the dominant culture, folks. We got to wake up. It's not just about us having a conversation about it. It's about changing those who are in power. That's the only way we're gonna break the stranglehold of white nationalism. And again, evangelicals, you're right. Don't say to me you don't. I'm not prejudiced. I'm not that. You voted for Donald Trump. 54% of white women evangelicals voted for Donald Trump. What does that tell you? You voted for a racist, a sexist, a misogynist, a bigot. That's who you voted for. That's the ideas you support. We got to change all that. Change all that, folks. American white nationalism. As we continue, okay, on part three, I want to say, first of all, it is a season to be jolly. That juxtaposition probably didn't work right. They're like, oh, now he's going to be nice to me. Listen, it's Christmas, folks, and it's a time of family. It's a time of coming together. It's a time of realizing that it's not about the gift, that human life is a gift. We are a gift to each other, whether you believe in God, or Allah, or you don't believe at all. Look around the world. You see the beauty that you are part of, and realize that here is a moment to say thank you. Here's a moment to love someone and to be loved, because as always, history will speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, a scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time, and what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we solved nothing and remain a divided peoples? Yes, history will speak of us.
We can make a difference if we try. We can beat the change that's in our lives. All we gotta do is work together. We gotta raise our children better. We gotta stop the hate, and spread the love.
One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
Your choice.
Today's broadcast is being brought to you by Blacken Studios. To learn more about Blacken Studios, please visit them at blackenstudios.com or visit them on their Facebook page, Blacken Studios. Today's broadcast is also being brought to you by Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. To learn more about Perry Publishing and Broadcasting, please visit their website at perrypublishingandbroadcasting.net. The opinions of the One Mic, One Voice show do not reflect the views of Blacken Studios or Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show.